Well, good morning. Thanks for joining us. If this is your first time or one of your first times to come into North Point, let me express my appreciation. I know it's hard sometimes to walk into a new place, and we're glad you did that. And if you're joining us online, we're grateful too. Thank you for joining us. So when I was in college, my parents moved from Houston to New Jersey. My dad worked in New York City. I stayed down there to go to college, but I would come home twice a year, Christmas and sometime during the summer. I don't know. Week, 10 days maybe, but I always take one day to go into the city, New York City, with my dad. And when you're coming in from the Jersey side, you got to cross the Hudson River, about a mile and a half, so you can go over the Lincoln, you can go over the George Washington Bridge, or you can go through the Lincoln Tunnel. I remember those times when we were in the tunnel, and usually it's back-to-back cars, I'm thinking, man, I hope this tunnel doesn't fail, because it's a bad scene. You know, there's a bunch of cars. I don't know how far underwater we are. It just wouldn't be good if this thing, poof. But I thought, you know, there is good reason to trust that the tunnel won't fail. It's been in place for decades. I'm sure the engineering was checked and rechecked. And so, yeah, even though, in a sense, my life was on the line, I felt comfortable trusting those who had put together the Lincoln Tunnel. Well, Jesus is calling us to that kind of trust. Like, if he fails, we're in trouble. He wants our complete weight, our complete dependence on him. The question is, why? Why would we give up that kind of autonomy? Why would we trust in that manner? Well, that's what I want to talk about today. So if you got a Bible, if you'd open it to Luke chapter 8, we're going to start in verse 26, and we're going to go through verse 39, wrestling with this question, why trust Jesus? Why trust Jesus? If you were with us last week, you've heard this. If not, you can hear it for the first time. But Luke 8, 26 to 39 is part of a bigger section that starts in Luke 8, 22 and goes through all the way through the end of the chapter to Luke 8, 56. And in that, we showed last week, Jesus has power over nature. The disciples got caught in a storm and they wigged out and they woke Jesus up. Don't you care, they're perishing. And Jesus said, hush, be still. And that was it. The storm was done. This week, we'll see a man possessed with demons and no one can control him. And we'll dive into how out of control this guy was until Jesus shows up and that's under control. And the next week, we'll meet a lady who's had hemorrhaging for 12 years and somebody who dies, and we'll see Jesus have power over illness and death. And this is one big section. Luke is writing to an audience that is polytheistic. They believe in a number of gods. You got the rain god, you got the moon god, you got the sun god, you got this. And Luke is saying, hey, there's a one-stop god. You can get a one-stop store. You got a one-stop god. Jesus is all-powerful. Now, we know he wrote this for Theophilus, but we also believe he wrote it for us who may be reviewing or dealing with what we're dealing with today, and we'll talk about that as we go through. So our passage opens this way in verse 26. They said, then they sailed to the country of the Gerasenes, which is opposite Galilee. The Gerasenes was not a popular place for Jewish people for at least a couple of reasons. One, there was a garrison of Roman troops stationed there. Jews didn't like the Romans. They were occupied by them. They loathed them, in fact. Second, as we'll see, there's a herd of pigs. Those were unclean animals, cultically, religiously to Jewish people. So Jews stayed away. It was mostly inhabited by Gentiles, except Jesus went where most people wouldn't go, and he goes into this region, and almost immediately he faces some kind of conflict. Verse 27 says, and when he came out onto the land, he was met by a man from the city who was possessed with demons. There we go. There's the conflict. What was this guy's condition? And who had not put on clothing for a long time and was not living in a house, but in the tombs. Okay, so this guy is so out of his mind that he runs around naked. And he lives in the graveyard. He runs around the tombs. That's where he's happiest. That's where he's most comfortable. That certainly is outside the norm. But when Jesus shows up, this causes a stir in this man possessed by demons. Verse 28, seeing Jesus, he cried out and fell before him. And that's, again, a show of a cry for mercy and a show of submission. And said in a loud voice, What business do we have with each other, Jesus? I think this is the demons who are coming out talking. Son of the Most High God. They recognize these demons, who Jesus is. They name him in an effort to get power. I beg you, do not torment me. Why is all this being said? Verse 29, for he had commanded the unclean spirit to come out of the man, for it had seized him many times and was bound, and he was bound with chains and shackles and kept under guard. And yet, he would break his bonds and be driven by the demon into the desert. So you couldn't even bring this guy in bond and chain and guard. You couldn't control him. He'd bust out of those things. He was uncontrollable. These demons so powerful until Jesus shows up. And Jesus asked, what is your name? Again, a show of authority. He said, Legion, for many demons had entered him. So there's this conversation going on between Jesus and the demons. And they were imploring him not to command them to go away into the abyss. And this is what Jesus usually did. With the demons, cast them out, you go to the abyss, and they wait there until the end of time when they'll be judged. This time, they say, hey, Jesus, don't send us to the abyss. And they're going to request to go somewhere else. And you might ask, Pastor, 3 years of seminary, Greek and Hebrew, why does Jesus grant this request? And those of you who have been here know my answer is, I don't know, man. Like, what good is your education? I don't know. Here's what I know. Jesus doesn't conform to our expectations. And Jesus does stuff that we go, really? And he just does what he does. And we ask, why would Jesus do that? Yeah, I don't know. Because Jesus doesn't answer to us. So, verse 32, now there was a herd of many swine feeding there on the mountain, and the demons implored him to permit them to enter the swine, and he gave them permission. And the demons came out of the man and entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and was drowned. Somebody just lost a whole lot of money there. Well, Andy, what happened to the demons once they were in the swine? What's my answer? I don't know. But to ask and to focus on those questions is to miss this point. Jesus has complete authority over these demons. Everything in the spiritual realm is under Jesus' control. And we're wrestling with this question. Remember, why trust Jesus? I'm driving through the Lincoln Tunnel. Why, man, this thing blows. I'm in trouble. We're in a position where we got to trust in Jesus. Why would we trust Jesus? Here's why. I'm going to borrow on last week's passage and add this week's to us. We trust Jesus because Jesus has power over nature and evil spirits. Jesus has power over nature and evil spirits. And that matters because no matter what you're facing, it's not out of Jesus' control. If he can stop a storm and he can cast out a legion of demons with just the word, what is it that you and I have going on that are too much for him? I think sometimes we get in a crisis and we get in a situation and Jesus up there goes, oh my word, and we better counsel here, Father, Son, and Spirit, what do we do? I don't know about this. We better go. No. No, he has complete authority and control. Now, we need to know that in his sovereignty, God has given Satan and his demons access and influence in our world. We need to know that, but we need not to be afraid of that. Paul speaks of that battle in Ephesians 6:12. He says this, for our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Then that passage goes on, I'm not going to read it all, to tell us to put on the armor of God. Because we are living a spiritual battle, and we need to be aware of it, but we don't need to be afraid of it. Let me see if I can illustrate it this way. I spent the 93-94 school year in campus ministry in Siberia. If that sounds cold, it was. I think about the middle of October, third week of October, it went below freezing, and it didn't come above freezing until late March, early April. I would usually get up to about 5, 6, 8 below, and it might get up to about 10. In November, my then girlfriend, who's now my wife, came up to visit me. She trained up 40 hours from Kazakhstan, and we went downtown to pick her up. It was 4 a.m., and we were going through the cold snap in Siberia. This was the coldest it was been. And when we went to pick her up, it was in Celsius, but it said 32 below. Yeah, that's cold. It's about 28-ish, 26-ish, depending in Fahrenheit. Well, he said, well, you know, Andy, in that kind of cold, I mean, you were there 9 months. Did you get hypothermia? Nope, not one time. Well, did you get frostbite? Did you ever get frostbite? Nope, not one time. Well, why? Because I dressed for it. Okay, Siberia, I know it's cold, so when I get up, I put long johns on, I put wool socks, I put my jeans, I put a t-shirt, I put a thermal, I put a wool sweater, I've got special insulated gloves, I've got a down jacket, I've got a hat. I never once had hypothermia or frostbite. Yeah, we live in a spiritual battle. Like, I dressed for it in Siberia. Dress for it. Put on the full armor of God. But don't be afraid. Don't be fearful. You and I serve the one who has complete authority in this spiritual battle. So let's be aware. Let's not be afraid. So Jesus has showed up in a big way, would you not say, in the Gerasene region? How do you think the people are going to respond? Well, let's find out. Verse 34, when the herdsmen saw what had happened, again, this was out in the grazing area, they ran away and reported it in the city and out in the country. All right, this is news. This guy, who we couldn't control with chains, and he was running around naked in the tombs, running out in the desert, can't control him. He's changed. Seriously, there's no way. No way. Well, let's see. The people went out to see what had happened. They'd heard it, but it's kind of hard to believe. And they came to Jesus, and what did they found? And found the man from whom the demons had gone out, sitting down at the feet of Jesus, clothed and in his right mind, and they became frightened. Why do you think they were frightened? Man, this guy's out of control. He's scary. Go live in the tombs, run around naked, but don't come. But now he's right there sitting, fully clothed, and in his right mind, listening to Jesus. Man, that's some power. That's some authority. You ought to be respecting someone who can pull that off with just a few words. How'd this happen again? Verse 36. Those who had seen it reported to them how the man who was demon-possessed had been made well. How? At the word of Jesus. Now, there's some sad scriptures throughout the Bible. To me, this is one of the saddest ones. Verse 37. And all the people of the country, the Gerasenes and the surrounding district, asked him to leave them. Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. He just brought this guy, demon-possessed, running around crazy, under control, and you want him to what? Want him to leave. Why? For they were gripped with great fear, and he got into a boat and returned. Jesus shows his goodness, but you know what else he shows? We can't control him. He don't act like we expect. Why in the world did he send a bunch of pigs over the cliff? That cost somebody a lot of money. That guy scares us. How do you do? How do I do with a good but uncontrollable God? We know he's good, but when he doesn't meet our objectives, when he doesn't meet our plans, when he doesn't meet what we think he should do, what's our response? We send him away? Or do we say, no, God's good. I'm going to get on board with what he's doing. The more we know and experience this guy, the more we can trust him. So let me tell you, maybe the first 3 months of my experience with Christ, I'm in a dorm Bible study. I come to faith in February of my freshman year at Texas A&M. I have come to college to secure my livelihood. We had job insecurity. That's a whole other story with my dad. And I've got this degree that's going to have a lot of opportunity, blah, 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 blah. And I'm a little concerned what Jesus is going to do. And you know what the leader, the guy who led me to the Lord said? And you need to trust Jesus ultimately, wherever he leads, for your livelihood. Now, that's crazy. That's crazy. That's taking this a little bit too far. But you know what the last 45, 50 years have taught me? I need to trust Jesus for my livelihood. Then, people, it gets more serious. About 2 months in to my faith, we're having a conversation. I'm telling my dating woes and whatever. And he says, Andy, you know, the Bible says you're only supposed to date somebody who's following Jesus like you are. And I thought, buddy, you don't understand. I'm not doing very well as it stands right now. And you're going to narrow my field? I don't think so. But you know what? Time shown me. God's right. I need to be dating and ultimately marrying a person, a woman of character. There are going to be times, man, when Jesus shows up in your life and he makes you uncomfortable. He's pushing you someplace you don't want to go. Let me remind you this, though. Jesus' ultimate show of power is in his crucifixion and resurrection. He was put on a cross on a Friday and certified dead. There was a guard, there was a stone, keep him in the tomb. And he came out Sunday. And that was for your good. So in those times when we're uncomfortable, would we remember that this all-powerful God is good? Well, there's someone who's really understanding the goodness of God, and that's the cat who just was released from the demons. And we read about him in verses 38 and 39. It says, but the man from whom the demons had gone out was begging him that he might accompany him. Now, all the people want him to leave. This guy wants to go with him. He's experienced Jesus. He knows he's good. But Jesus sent him away saying, return to your house and describe what great things God has done for you. So he did. He went away proclaiming throughout the whole city what great things Jesus had done for him. You know, God will call some to go to distant lands, to go to unreached places. And God bless them, and I exhort them to follow God's call. Many of us he will call to stay right where we are and do right what this guy said. Jesus said, I want you to tell people what I've done in your life. I want you to speak in your circle of family and friends and coworkers and et cetera. That's why we talk about being Christ in our community. We have a responsibility of that corporately, but that fleshes out individually. God sent this guy on mission right where he was living. So God is sending us individually and then corporately, right where we're living to be on mission. Would we have a ready response to tell people simply what Jesus has done in our life? So we've come face to face with the power of Jesus. Last week, power over nature. This week, power over evil spirits. If he can handle those things, what is it in your life and mine that he can't handle? So I need to ask the question again. I asked it last week. I'll ask it this week. I'm going to ask it next week. What's your storm? What's your crisis? What do you got going on, man, that's robbing you of sleep? What is it you can't stop thinking about? You believe Jesus got that under control? I'm talking about the potential diagnosis of Alzheimer's. I'm talking about your kids rebelling. I'm talking about your parents are smothering you. I'm talking about your boss at work is talking about downsizing. I'm talking about whatever. What is it that Jesus can't handle in your life? Now, in his sovereignty, in his control, he may not do things the way you expect, just like we saw with these demons, lets them go in the herds. Herd of pigs goes over the sea. That's a lot of money. Are you okay in Jesus' process if he makes you uncomfortable? Is that going to cause you to bolt and leave? Is that going to say, Jesus, take off? Or are we people in faith that when he makes us uncomfortable, we'll say, I'm all in on this God who's good. I'm all in, I'm all there, and I'm not stepping back. My full and complete trust is in him. I think it was 10 years ago this summer, we took a family vacation to Chicago. And one of the places you have to see if you go to Chicago is the Willis Tower, right? Sears Tower. Now, I'm a person who's afraid of heights. I got a family, I think, that's adopted that. And so my wife decides to stay down, and me and my two sons go up on the Willis Tower. And I don't think we're all the way to the top, but we're within a couple hundred feet. I think Willis Tower is about 1,700 and some feet. So we're at least 1,500 feet up. And there's a building, and then there's a little ledge attached to the building where you can step up and look down. And whoa, that's a good ways down there, that 1,500 feet. Now, I'm not normally a guy who would step out, but because that ledge was attached to the building and it was enclosed in glass, I was okay. And we could look down and look at the city. It was kind of enjoyable. And I wasn't frightened because I believed the place I was stepping out on was trustworthy. I didn't think it was going to, and me and my sons were going to go down. Do you understand that's what we have in Jesus? When he calls us to step out, he's trustworthy. So even in those times when we feel uncomfortable, will we step out? Why trust Jesus? Because Jesus shows he has power over nature and power over evil spirits.